This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Secretary of State Colin Powell is in the Middle East today. He's wrapping up now separate meetings with both prime ministers of Israel as well as the Palestinian Authority.
What we are trying to achieve together is the president's goal, viable, independent, sovereign, and democratic Palestine, living in peace and security alongside an Israel that has been fully integrated into the region.
After a private session earlier with Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas, Secretary Powell cited, quote, difficult decisions and hard steps ahead. He said a current key moment of opportunity, in his words, in the troubled region must be seized, and he said the two sides must move urgently to end recently renewed violence and implement the new so-called roadmap for Middle East peace. Iran is remaining defiant today toward a call by the United Nations Nuclear Oversight Agency for tougher inspections of its nuclear facilities. The International Atomic Energy Agency's Board of Governors made that call at a meeting in Vienna this week. Iran, though, says the agency must first honor its own commitments to Iran. Middle East correspondent Roxana Saveri has more from Tehran.
Tehran says that in order for it to sign up to stricter inspections, certain international sanctions must be lifted, and it should get outside help with nuclear technology. The U.S. has been leading accusations that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons, charges Iran denies. The IAEA reprimanded Iran this week for failing to comply with its nuclear obligations, but the agency's statement fell short of the resolution the U.S. had hoped for, which would have condemned Iran's nuclear program. The head of the Iranian Atomic Energy Agency insists the conclusions reached in Vienna prove Iran's nuclear activities are transparent. For its part, Washington is backing the board's report, saying it underlines international opposition to Tehran developing banned weapons. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has accused Iran of having a covert nuclear weapons program. He admits, however, as may turn out to be the case with Iraq, intelligence information on the alleged program is not concrete.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
A massive wildfire has now burned some 4,000 acres in southern Arizona and destroyed nearly $100 million worth of buildings. The Arizona Daily Star says that destroyed buildings on private land include cafes, inns, rental cabins, second homes, and full-time residences. The blazes also forced hundreds of people to evacuate. Convicted rapist and Max Factor heir Andrew Luster is now in prison following his return to California from Mexico yesterday, where he had been on the run. Luster began serving the first day of his 124-year sentence at the Wasco State Prison just north of Bakersfield.
Hurry into Sears for the big one-day sale for great savings throughout the store. Save big on our entire stock of summer clothes to give your family a bright new look. Get ready for the great outdoors with all mowers, tractors, patio sets, and Kenmore grills on sale. And add a little sparkle to your summer with fine jewelry now 50% off. It's only for one day, so come into Sears this Saturday for the big one-day sale. Find us online at Sears.com or at America Online, keyword Sears. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale in 621.
A new study on the effectiveness of AIDS drugs is warning the unregulated supply in non-industrialized nations could speed up the development of drug-resistant strains of HIV. Those findings are published in the British Medical Journal, and correspondent Suzanne Chislett has details from London.
The study by the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine urges governments and international agencies to deal with this problem now. Using evidence from Africa and Asia, the research shows that uncontrolled prescribing of antiretroviral drugs is widespread and rising. It also found that in some some places, patients are changing medication frequently, taking the wrong dose or stopping treatment in periods when they can't afford it. And it's warning that's exactly the set of conditions in which a virus quickly becomes drug resistant. Suzanne Chislett, London.
And also citing public health concerns, McDonald's is asking its meat suppliers now to cut down on the use of antibiotics in their animals. The fast food giant says the overuse of antibiotics in the food supply is reducing their effectiveness in treating human disease. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Petri dishes, grandma's parlor, and well-used tennis shoes. All breeding grounds for yucky mold. Don't wrinkle your nose, because you've got one, too, in your car. When we come back, I'll tell you where.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
Your car's heater and air conditioner provide the perfect breeding ground for smelly mold and mildew. Here's a tip to eliminate these odors. Disconnect the AC compressor before starting your car in the morning. Set the emergency brake and crank your engine. Run your AC on max and in the recirculation mode. Then spray a small can of Lysol in the passenger's foot area behind the glove compartment. Let dry 1 hour and reconnect the compressor. Voila! A car that will smell fresher all season. Now for those tennis shoes. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome to our program today, broadcasting all over the United States on terrestrial radio stations, beaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite, and streaming live on the internet from IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. Will factory farming destroy civilization? We're going to get into this here in this first hour. I think it's a really interesting topic. What's going on with this? Is our civilization set to repeat a terrible mistake that has happened to past civilizations? Day 92 today of the search for weapons of mass distraction. The tail end of the Bush October surprise from the 2002 campaign was the war in Iraq. And here now, 92 days later, we're seeing that more and more, as Congressman Kucinich has charged openly on the floor of the House of Representatives, although in all probability you didn't learn about that on Fox News. If you'd like to drop into our chat room today, we've got a couple of folks in there already. Go to TomHartman.com on the internet. Click on the link to the radio show. Click on the button that says chat, and it'll take you to the trade forum on CompuServe. Click the chat button there, and you will be in. And so let's get on with this stuff here. In 1532, this may sound like obscure history, but this is to understand how this stuff happens is so useful. In 1532, Francisco Pizarro led a force of 260 mercenaries to the coast of what is now called Peru. With 62 horsemen and 198 foot soldiers, he disembarked and traveled upland into the Andes to the Inca town of Cajamarca, where he requested an audience with the Incan emperor. The emperor traveled to Cajamarca for the supposedly peaceful meeting with the foreign visitors, and Pizarro captured him and his entourage, holding them ransom until several weeks later he was paid two roomfuls of silver and a roomful of gold. Now, when the Incans
came up with two roomfuls of silver and a roomful of gold, Pizarro said, there's something here. He was so certain that there was something there that he garroted, he murdered, you know, the wire around the neck. He garroted the emperor and his aides, buried their bodies, and began the long march to Cusco, or Cuzco, depending on how you pronounce it, the mountaintop capital of the Incan Empire, of what was then known as Tuantinsuyo. What he found at that capital, at Cusco, in 1532, was the world's largest empire. The world's largest empire. Now, Pizarro was representing Spain. He thought he was the representative of a great empire, and Spain was part of Europe, and he thought that was part of a great empire. Well, actually, in point of fact, at that point in time, the two largest empires in the world were the Ming Dynasty and the Ottoman Empire. Europe was a distant third, but in any case, what Pizarro had come across, the Incan Empire, was the world's largest empire, unknown to Europeans, or to the Ottomans, or the Turks, or to the Chinese. And it was more populous than Ming China, and larger than the Turkish Ottoman Empire, and far larger than Spain. The Incan Empire ruled over what is now Peru, Argentina, Chile, Colombia, Bolivia, and Ecuador, virtually all of South America except for the jungles and rainforests of what is now called Brazil. The Incans had built over 40,000 kilometers of all-weather highways and roads, a road system that was unequaled anywhere in the world until the 1950s. It's incredible. Their empire was divided into 80 political provinces, and like the Romans, they had a language that everybody used. It was called Runasimi. And the town of Cusco, where these guys finally showed up, actually was studded with gold. Huge esplanades, sparkling fountains, massive buildings for administration and governance, majestic temples, gold gleamed everywhere. Gold ornaments worn by the citizens, entire gold walls on the insides and outsides of the temples and royal palaces. Inti was the name of their god of gods, who was the sun. When they looked up at the sun, they thought they were looking at the creator of all things, and so the sun god was everywhere and always done in gold. So Pizarro, Francisco Pizarro, with 260 men, having killed the emperor, pulled together the leaders of the Incan Empire and read them what was called the requirement. The requirement is something that Christopher Columbus read to the natives when he landed on Hispaniola in what is now the Dominican Republic. And it was required, it was called the requirement because it was required for all of the conquistadors, the Spanish and Portuguese conquerors, and the Catholic conquerors, to read this whenever they encountered natives. It goes as follows. He read. This is what Pizarro said to the... These people, of course, didn't speak Spanish, so they had no idea what he was saying, but he read it anyway. He said, "I implore you to recognize the Church as a lady, and in the name of the Pope, take the King as Lord of this land and obey his mandates. If you do not, I assure you that with the help of God, I will make war upon you in every place and every way that I can. And I will subject to the yoke and obedience of the Church and their highnesses. And I will take your persons and your women and your children, and I will make them slaves. I will take your goods, and I will do you all the evils and harms which I can. The deaths and injuries that you will receive from here on will be your own fault and not that of His Majesty nor of the gentlemen who accompany me." End of quote. So Pizarro shows up, the largest empire in the world, reads the requirement, and with 260 guys, conquers South America. How did he do it? How do you take on the world's largest empire with 260 men? Well, this is the part that you generally don't find in the history books that we all studied in high school. You may in a college course, of course, because this is no secret, but it's just conveniently overlooked in most histories that deal with what happened both to the Incans and to many of the Native Americans in the United States. In 1532, when Pizarro showed up in Cusco, the reason he was able to conquer that empire and take thousands of tons of gold. I mean, they actually divided the Incan Empire into mining stakes, and they were not doing mining. They were simply melting down the relics and shipping them back to Spain. This is what brought about the whole resurgence of empire and led to the end of the eventually to the end of the Ottoman Empire, I mean, at the end of World War I, was all this gold. What allowed them to do this was that 90% of the Incans, when he arrived, were dead. They had died in the previous 5 years. And they had died because in 1520, a Spanish conquistador had introduced the plague in Mexico. And that disease ran like wildfire down across Central America, into South America. And in 1524, smallpox jumped the Isthmus of Panama, killing virtually everybody in its path. In 1525, Huayna Capac, the last Incan Empire emperor, true, you know, of the lineage, the guy that Pizarro garroted was one of his assistants who had survived, but the last of the line of Incan emperors died of smallpox in 1525, along with his son and heir apparent and most of his family. The power vacuum and demographic collapse was so great that when Pizarro arrived 7 years later, there was only a sickly remnant of the once mighty civilization left to oppose him. So we see that a civilization crashed in South America because of disease. Now, what about in North America? George Washington was often referred to in our histories as the severely pockmarked George Washington. He'd had smallpox, and he still carried the scars from it. Chickenpox, smallpox, influenza, bubonic plague, hepatitis, all of these were diseases that were common among Europeans and made them sick, but usually didn't kill them. Even smallpox only had a fatality rate of 10 to 20% among Europeans, because for generations, and even the plague was in the 30%, because for generations they had been exposed to this disease and they developed genetic immunities. According to William McNeil's book, Plagues and Peoples, Doubleday published this in 1997, he put the population, the Native American population in North, Central, and South America at the time that Columbus arrived here at about 100 million on both continents. Today, on both continents, there are fewer than 1 million pure blood ancestors of these people. 3 years before the Pilgrims landed in Massachusetts, the Dutch, French, and British had been trading with the natives and spreading plague, mostly smallpox, actually. They had brought traditional plague as well, but smallpox was the big killer. So that by the time the Pilgrims showed up in 1620, Robert Cushman, a British eyewitness, said that fewer than 5% of the Native Americans were left alive. Now, in our history books, we get this whole Daniel Boone version of, visitors from Europe, you know, the Puritans and the Mayflower, and they fought against great odds and angry savages. No, in 1620, when we arrived, 95% were dead in the areas where we first arrived. Entire villages were wiped out, the ground covered with skull and bones, the few survivors in most cases having fled westward, carrying the plague with them. That between 90 and 95% of the native inhabitants of New England were wiped out by disease was seen by John Winthrop, the then governor of Massachusetts Bay Colony, as a, quote, miraculous sign from God. He wrote a letter to a friend in England in 1634 saying, quote, but for the natives in these parts, God has so pursued them as for 300 miles space, the greatest part of them are swept away by the smallpox, which still continues among them. So as God hath thereby cleared our title in this place, those who remain in these parts, being in all not 50 Native American persons, have put themselves under our protection, end quote. The Puritan minister Increase Mather, you've heard of Cotton Mather, this was, I believe it was his brother, wrote, and I quote, God ended the controversy by sending the smallpox amongst the Indians. Whole towns of them were swept away, and some of them not so much as one soul escaping the destruction, end quote. And the famous William Bradford, in his incredibly well-known book On Plymouth Plantation, written in 1632, said, quote, for it pleased God to afflict these Indians with such a deadly sickness that out of 1,000, over 950 of them died, and many of them lay rotting above ground for want of burial. This was how the American Indians, the Native Americans, were conquered. It's how the South Americans were conquered. And when you look back in history, you discover that plagues and the destruction of food supplies wiped out the Mesopotamians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Huns, the Ottomans, the Inca, the Aztecs, right across the board. Are we setting this up for ourselves now? Might we be facing a similar fate? Stay tuned. We'll explore this in just a moment with the Tom Hartman program here on the IE America Radio Network.
Hurry into Sears for the big one-day sale for great savings throughout the store. Save big on our entire stock of summer clothes to give your family a bright new look. Get ready for the great outdoors with all mowers, tractors, patio sets, and Kenmore grills on sale. And add a little sparkle to your summer with fine jewelry now 50% off. It's only for one day, so come into Sears this Saturday for the big one-day sale. Find us online at Sears.com or at America Online, keyword Sears. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 6/21.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The General helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Mom, what's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party. You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
The moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time. Followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 2 p.m. Then the Peter Werby Show turns up the heat a little bit from 2 p.m. till 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7. Followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, i.e. America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the i.e. America Radio Network.
See the dog and butterfly.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the iAmerica Radio Network. Danielle Nirenberg joined the World Watch Institute in 1999 as a research intern, and she became a staff researcher in 2000. Since spring of 2001, she's worked on issues of gender and population, as well as sustainable agriculture as a staff researcher. She's currently working with Brian Halwell on a project concerning global meat production and consumption, and has some interesting things to share with us about the state of factory farming and its possible impact on our civilization. Welcome, Danielle, to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Tell me about your sense of what's going on here with factory farming. What are the dangers that we face? What are the problems? What are the cracks in the wall, as it were?
The cracks in the system are definitely spreading, and I think that's the thing we should be focusing on. Factory farming started in the United States and Eastern Europe shortly after World War II as an efficient assembly line method of producing meat and other animal products. And unfortunately, there were a number of side effects such as pollution, worker injury that also went along with this increased mechanization. And so now what's happening is these practices are spreading to the developing world. And in my article in World Watch magazine, I focused on the Philippines, where factory farming is increasing.
Right, I have that. Factory farming in the developing world. It's an excellent piece, by the way. Is this available online?
Yes, it is.
And where would people find that?
At www.worldwatch.org.
Okay, great. Some of the statistics that you share in the article I found really interesting about the increase in global meat production and what's actually going on and how it's going on and how the trends have changed so rapidly after 500 generations of humans living the way that they've lived. Suddenly in two or three generations we have this really radical shift.
Right.
You want to describe that for our listeners?
Well, what happened, I think, is that because meat was considered a luxury for most of history, it was, you know, a source of, at religious festivals, a source of enjoyment, and people, you know, treasured it in a different way. But now that it's become so common, and people all over the world, not just in the United States, you know, can get McDonald's hamburgers, it's the overproduction and the overconsumption of it has increased.
Yeah. And we've seen a fivefold increase since 1955, is that
right?
In global meat production. And feedlots now are responsible for 43% of the world's beef, half the world's pork.
Right, and almost all of, you know, the beef that's produced in the United States is on factory farms, and nearly all of the chicken.
Right. E. coli 1, as I recall, it's E. coli, what, 157 or H7?
Right.
Is that the designation?
Yes.
Tell us how that got into. This is a germ that didn't even exist 30 or 40 years ago. It's a
right,
mutant
right. It was just detected about maybe 12 years ago now. And part of the reason it spreads is through animal feces. Mm-hmm. And the increased mechanization and processing, meat processing plants, has speeded up how that disease is spread, because feces will get on the meat, and if it's not properly cooked, then it can spread to humans quite easily.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Danielle Nirenberg of the World Watch Institute. It's 28 minutes after the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. And Danielle, how did this bug come to exist?
It's a mutation of, you know, a pathogen that existed before, and now that we have these industrial processes, it just spreads more easily.
And what do you think that this has something to do with the overfeeding of antibiotics to
that feed? Is one cause of it, and that's why, you know, McDonald's just yesterday or the day before decided that they would only buy from their poultry from producers who didn't use antibiotics.
Yeah, I heard that this morning. I was talking with my producer, and she said, you know, this incredible thing, McDonald's is not buying antibiotic-based meats. I'd like to get into the possible politics of that, and we'll get into a little more detail here on what's happening around the world with Danielle Nirenberg of the World Watch Institute after this commercial break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament?
How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
The Senate Commerce Committee voted yesterday to partially reverse a move by the FCC to deregulate the media industry. The Federal Communications Commission voted on June 2nd to relax rules governing media ownership, paving the way to a wave of media consolidation. But Congress could move to reverse the rule changes, though many critics worry that if House Republicans block such a move, the trend towards media monopoly will continue.
This could be very big in that the trend is going to be for corporations to try to own as many TV stations and the newspaper in a given market.
Wayne Countryman is a copy editor with the Baltimore Sun. His union is in a tough contract battle with the Tribune Company, a media conglomerate that Countryman fears is hoping to benefit from deregulation.
That means there'll be fewer reporters covering meetings, fewer editors working on their stories. So not only does that mean that there'll be fewer jobs in the long run, but also fewer people covering the news, fewer viewpoints?
Should the FCC's rule changes remain in effect, newspaper corporations like Tribune could, for the first time, purchase television stations and vice versa.
Germany's largest labor union is expanding a two-week low-level strike in the eastern part of the country. Manufacturing and engineering workers there, represented by IG Metall, say they're forced to work 38-hour weeks for the same amount of pay that their West German counterparts get for only working 35 hours. Until recently, the strike was confined to just one eastern state, but has now expanded to three, hitting factories in Berlin especially hard. An estimated 11,000 people are now walking picket lines, but no talks have been scheduled between the union and the consortium of companies who typically negotiate industry-wide contracts.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Tired of the same old conservative blather on talk radio? Want a different slant on politics in the world than what's offered up by right-wing wacko talk show hosts? Then join me, Peter Werby, 2 to 5 p.m. It's my new time. That's Eastern Time. Weekdays for an alternative not often heard on the AM band. If you want to hear a talk show host that opposes Bush's wars, challenges corporate rule, defends the interests of working people, the environment, and a woman's right to choose, then join me, Peter Werby, in my new time slot, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're speaking today with Danielle Nirenberg of the World Watch Institute. And Danielle, in our chat room, Rudy, one of the folks in there who are carrying on a conversation in real time as we're talking about this on the radio, says on the same subject of factory farms, what about the genetically modified foods industry and its marketing to the third world? Is this another dimension of a larger problem?
Right. I think it's just a larger picture of, you know, what agribusiness is doing around the world through globalization. You know, it's gaining control in every facet that they can.
By the way, I wanted to let our listeners know that if you want to call in and be on the program, if you have a question for Danielle or for me, the number or a comment to make, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Danielle, talk about the diseases jumping species barriers. In your article, you talk about one that happened in 1997, where 6 out of the 18 people who were infected died.
Right, and that was an avian flu in Hong Kong. And the thing is, when there are lots of animals all together in one place next to lots of humans, the potential for disease to spread from one to the other is increased. And that's what's been happening, especially in urban areas like in China, where factory farms or are located right next to urban areas. And so the potential for not only increased pollution but increased disease is more prevalent there.
And back to the genetically modified foods, what kind of risk do these represent? I mean, is this part of a risk in our food supply, or is this simply the big new thing like hybridization was back in the days of Gregor Mendel?
No, I would definitely say it's a risk because, you know, we don't know what effect that these genetically modified foods will have on, you know, on future health. We don't have any idea what sort of playing with the genetics of our animals will do in terms of our health, you know, because we are what we eat. And if we treat our animals badly, that will, you know, eventually come back on us.
Do you see any hope for labeling genetically modified food? I understand about 70-80% of our food supply right now is genetically modified organisms, and yet the government has ruled that these don't have to be, and in fact, in some cases, can't be labeled, or you can't.
Right, right.
What's the situation with that?
The United States is resisting labeling of these foods, and the European Union wants them to be labeled, and I think the more the public knows about them, the better. We should have the right to determine which foods we want. And I think, you know, it's just a basic human right to know what you're eating.
In our chat room, Green Babu G says, forget about the third world. Monsanto is suing farmers in Canada who pollen from nearby GMO fields pollinate their crops for growing unlicensed plants. Tell us about that.
Right. Percy Schmeiser is a canola farmer in Canada who was sued by Monsanto, and his case is currently being decided. It's under appeal right now, but he was accused by Monsanto of using their genetically modified canola seeds because they had spread onto his yard. You know,
theft by wind?
Right, by wind. You know, it's very easy for them to spread from one field to another. And the thing about Percy's farm is that he had been producing his own hybridized, very selective canola seeds that were doing really well. And because he didn't want to buy into the Monsanto method of producing canola, he thinks they went after him, which is highly likely.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Almost like a setup. I know, Danielle, that you have to leave in a moment. You've got a meeting to go to. But one last question here.
Sure.
In your article, you talked about the government has also encouraged big farms to expand by giving them loans. What's the situation with the not just the World Trade Organization and that sort of thing, but also the World Bank and domestic and national governments?
Right.
They're encouraging this and in a way that is harmful to small farmers.
Sure. Subsidies. You know, like the ones we see for big farmers in the U.S., they're not only present here, they're, you know, other governments like in the Philippines and Taiwan are encouraging farmers to, you know, expand their operations and, you know, use technology to increase their productivity and increase their wealth. And so what's happening is the small farmers are being driven out and the big farmers and the middle farmers are, you know, taking over the entire business. And so what's happening is that they're losing a lot of agricultural heritage, you know, ways of doing things. They're losing animal diversity as certain breeds are selected and others die out.
Right.
So it's a big problem.
And also the potential for the accumulation of disease.
Exactly.
Great. Okay, and one last question. 19 million tons of manure every year in just one state, North Carolina. What is the impact? Tell us about how North Carolina has changed since 1987 and what that means for the citizens of that state and for the nation.
Hog production has just gone wild there because of, you know, economic conditions. The big pork companies came in and, you know, offered people offered the farmers there an alternative to either shutting down their farms. So a lot of the farmers expanded, increased their supplies, and became essentially contract farmers to Smithfield or IBP or other big companies. And what happened was that farms that could before control how much manure they had and, you know, use it on their crops, now they were producing just massive amounts of it. And, you know, it can't be spread on fields when there's just too much of it to use for fertilizer. So a lot of it gets stored in lagoons. And as we saw with the hurricane a few years ago, those lagoons are very susceptible to natural disasters.
Right. In other words, they spread this manure all over over the place.
Rivers, and they produce a lot of fish kills.
Right. Incredible. Danielle Nirenberg of the World Watch Institute. Danielle, one last time here, give your URL, how people can learn more about this and perhaps contact you if they wish.
And find my email on WRL3Farming in the Developing World.
Great. Great. Danielle, thank you very much for being on the program today, and I wish you well in your work and in your endeavors.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks. Okay, factory farming, the widespread and worldwide spread of factory farming is both increasing, this according to an article in The Guardian, is both increasing poverty. Now, see, the promise made by the cons, the conservatives, the promise of the cons is that if we just let big companies get bigger, if we let large media combines buy up media, if we let agriculture, as things get bigger and bigger and bigger, they become more and more efficient, and out of that efficiency come good things. But what we're seeing in the example, for example, of factory farming, one of the better examples, is that as things get bigger and bigger, very often what it does is it leads to a terrible instability, a terrible fundamental weakness, that diversity is really a positive value, that diversity is essential to the survival of biological systems and economic systems and political systems right across the board, and that by encouraging companies to get bigger and bigger and bigger, or processes like factory farming, what we're doing is we're creating a teetering tower that is standing on one single skinny little leg that somebody can come along and push this thing and crash, down it goes. And this is just one dimension of it. And, yeah, it enriches vastly and gives incredible power, which translates into political power, to a small group of people representing a few very large corporations. And that, of course, the prime value of the conservatives and the Republicans in America today is cheap labor, increased profits. Everything ultimately boils down to that. You can take issue by issue. And I want to do a whole program on this because this is a fascinating thing. I got an email about this morning that I want to share with you, but I don't have it right here in front of me right now. But this is, and this is just one more dimension of it. We have a situation for example, in the United Kingdom, a study was just done by the UK Public Health System, and they found that 30% of the raw chicken in England is contaminated with salmonella, and 75% was contaminated with campylobacter. In Holland, 85% of the pigs sampled were found to be infected with campylobacter. And not only that, antibiotic-resistant infections are growing as well. What happens is you get these bugs, and they grow in the presence of these antibiotics that are fed constantly to these animals to, quote, enhance their growth, end quote. And it does work to some extent. It's a small marginal increase, but it's one that, if you've got 100,000 hogs, makes a difference. It's measurable. And as a consequence, these bugs growing in the guts or in the bodies of these animals, constantly exposed to low levels of antibiotics, the bugs that develop, that mutate into antibiotic-resistant forms, come to be the only ones left. So we have a situation, for example, where in Cape Town, South Africa, there are actually factory farms. And they went in and they found that these chickens in these factory farms in Cape Town, South Africa, were contaminated by bacteria that caused severe diarrhea, skin ulceration, and even typhoid. And 100% of the bacteria were resistant to the common antibiotics, the ones that are being routinely administered to these animals. So could we be facing a meltdown in the United States? I wonder what your thoughts are on this. 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937 is our phone number. One of the folks in our chat room had also brought up another topic. This is Greenbog had said, Tom, I just want to say that the dropping of the charges against the two fighter pilots, I believe this member is in Canada. You can let me know here on the screen, based on the things the level of knowledge of Canada that this member has. Tom, I just want to say that the dropping of the charges against the two fighter pilots who killed those Canadian soldiers in Afghanistan is a complete and total travesty of justice, good taste, and international respect. I heard the mother of one of the victims of one of the Canadians who was killed by these two hot dog pilots, American pilots, who it was found at the time in an initial inquiry had acted recklessly, that she said, well, you know, they're facing years and years in prison. I really didn't want them to go to prison, she said, but I thought they should have their wings clipped. But apparently they're just going to walk away from this. It's just going to be no big deal. Now, what's happening, and I think this is unfortunate, but we have this growing culture that the military is untouchable, that they can do no wrong. And that's a very dangerous thing. When we don't look at the problems within our own system and say, you know, this is wrong, we need to fix this, then our system becomes progressively more and more dysfunctional over time and very, very destructive consequences. What are communities in America doing about factory farming? What's the hope in this? Ah, Green Babu G says that he or she is, in fact, in Calgary, just south of Edmonton. We have a listener in Calgary at the moment. It's interesting. We've had calls and listeners in Scotland and England. We had one in Hong Kong. It's amazing. I mean, not only is the show being broadcast on terrestrial radio stations all over the United States, but with IE America Radio runs one of the large, and radiopower.org, 1.7 million members. They just celebrated their one-year anniversary, radiopower.org. And so people all over the world are listening on the Internet as well. It's just remarkable. The first week of December, back in 1776, Thomas Paine... Now you're going to say, what does this have to do with factory farming? I'll wrap this up. This does. Thomas Paine wrote a pamphlet in which he said, tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. Heaven knows how to put a proper price upon its goods, and it would be strange indeed if so celestial an article as freedom should not be highly rated. End quote. Exactly 226 years later, another small group of Pennsylvanians met in early December to sign a document that claimed the same right, what they said was their duty, to alter their government in a way that would restore the democracy the original founders were willing to fight and die for. The democratically elected municipal officials of Porter Township put their signatures to an ordinance passed unanimously on December 9th of last year. It reads in part, a corporation is a legal fiction created by the express permission of the people. Interpretation of the U.S. Constitution by the Supreme Court justices to include corporations in the term persons has long wrought havoc with our democratic processes by endowing corporations with constitutional privileges intended solely to protect the citizens of the United States or natural persons within its borders. The judicial bestowal of civil and political rights upon corporations interferes with the administration of laws within Porter Township and usurps basic human and constitutional rights exercised by the people of Porter Township. Now, what had brought this about was a corporation that wanted to haul sewage sludge, into this township and spread it around, and the folks in Porter Township said, no, you can't. And this corporation sued, saying that as a person, they were being discriminated against by the township. 10 other communities in Pennsylvania similarly sued to say that corporations can't own farms in their communities. That whether it's agricultural waste, and sewage sludge, or whether it's simply the ownership of farms by corporations, communities in Pennsylvania are fighting back with the head of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, the help of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDEF, CELDF.org is their website. These communities are starting to say, no, we do not acknowledge that corporations are persons. And they're using this as a tool, as a weapon to say, let's go back to the way America used to be. Let's go back to the idea that only humans have human rights, and that if big corporations are going to engage in these kinds of practices that are patently destructive, we are going to stop them. We are not going to allow it to continue. This is citizens taking power back for themselves. This is the hope out of this kind of situation. Stick around. We'll be right back. Thanks, Green Baboo G, for listening in from Canada, and all the other folks in our chat room. I appreciate your feedback. And we'll be right back right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Hurry into Sears for the big one-day sale for great savings throughout the store. Save big on our entire stock of summer clothes to give your family a bright new look. Get ready for the great outdoors with all mowers, tractors, patio sets, and Kenmore grills on sale. And add a little sparkle to your summer with fine jewelry now 50% off. It's only for one day, so come into Sears this Saturday for the big one-day sale. Find us online at Sears.com or at America Online, keyword Sears. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale in 621.
Hi, this is Peter Werby from the IE America Radio Network, wondering whether you've heard about In These Times magazine, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture, has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. Find out what you're missing. Visit them online at www.inthesetimes.com or call them toll-free at 1-800-827-0270.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Animal?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. Well, let's move on to somebody who is evil but very bright. That would be Ari Fleischer.
At the briefing today,
the job of anybody who is the White House press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking and why he's thinking it. And that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, right.
The job of the press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
When do I get to my Game Boy? Hey, it's time for lunch. I want to take a nap. How do you spell Putin? Let me see. Who's the president of Afghanistan?
You know he tried to kill my dad? Oh, my God. There's Laura with my milk. Faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
Alrighty then.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. If corporate lobbyists continue to have their way with the Illinois State Legislature, according to Bill Berkowitz of WorkingForChange.com, it may become as difficult to find out the skinny on factory farming as it has been to ferret out the truth of the Jenin refugee camp invasion or discover how many innocent civilians were killed by U.S. bombing in Afghanistan. The public's right to know is under attack both at home and abroad. Owners of factory farm operations, Bill Berkowitz says, do not want the outside world to find out what's going on. A few weeks back, the Illinois House took one step toward that goal by passing House Bill 5793 by a 118-0. You know where these guys are getting their campaign contributions from. By a 118-0 vote. Legislators passed a bill making it illegal to photograph or videotape the animals on factory farms without the consent of their owner. You drive by on the public street and you take a picture and you go to prison. Is America great or what? The Journal Star reports, quote, the stated need for the law, according to a legislative analysis, is to protect the food supply from terrorists. The more plausible reason is that opponents of factory farms have been fond of using pictures of pigs raised body to body or lagoons filled with sewage to bolster their case. End quote. Corporations buying off legislatures to promote an industry that is putting the health of the public, in some cases, at risk. Now, the industry, of course, would say that they're promoting the health of the public by making more food available to more people in a more consistent fashion. And I'm sure there's some truth to that. But these larger issues just get buried. They just get lost. Stick around for our next hour. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, bringing you uncommon sense from the radical middle. We'll be right back.
It's coming through a hole in the air. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
truth seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Secretary of State Colin Powell today is demanding Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas make urgent security reforms immediately. Recent clashes between Israelis and Palestinians have killed about 60 people since the U.S.-backed peace plan was unveiled earlier this month. Middle East correspondent Roxana Saberi has the latest.
Secretary of State Colin Powell says the Palestinian Authority must take decisive steps to disarm the Islamic militant group Hamas. The group has killed hundreds of Israelis in shootings and bombings in recent years. Powell was speaking in a joint news conference with the Israeli Prime Minister, who says no progress can be made on the peace plan until Palestinian security forces crack down on the militias. Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas is trying to negotiate a truce with Hamas and other armed groups. He has said he will not use force against them for fear of triggering civil war. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
A massive wildfire in southern Arizona has already destroyed more than 200 homes and businesses and forced hundreds of people to evacuate the area. It's still burning, and Fire Chief George Good says it could still take several more days to put the blaze entirely out.
The most recent briefing we've seen is talking about a minimum of 14 to 21 more days, and that's if we're lucky, if all the conditions go in our favor. But if we don't get any rain and the winds keep up, it could be a lot longer than that.
The fire is burning now in the area of a ski resort just outside of Tucson in a steep canyon area. The fire has been fueled by wind gusts up to 60 miles an hour. Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano has declared a state of emergency in Pima County and put the state's National Guard on standby. Meanwhile, West Virginia Governor Bob Wise is asking President Bush to declare 10 counties in his state federal disaster areas. He's asking for the assistance after touring sections of the state hard hit by flooding. Declaration, of course, allows people to be eligible for low-interest loans and individual assistance grants from FEMA. Water damage, however, to phone lines means it could take days to determine just how many people need help. A spokesman for Verizon says some of his company's offices and repair equipment have been damaged as well.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man.
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief. Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue. Without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
The Senate is now backing a limited program to allow importing medications from Canada in an effort to cut costs. The measurements an amendment to a larger drug benefit package and a scaled-back version of earlier legislation. It would allow licensed pharmacists to import certain FDA-approved drugs. The American Medical Association, meanwhile, is calling for a ban on the sale of over-the-counter dietary supplements containing anabolic steroid-like ingredients. The largest doctors group in the United States cites national surveys showing the use of anabolic steroids is actually increasing still in high school students, particularly among young women.
My cat Boots got stuck way up in a tree. My dad saw how scared I was. He climbed up there and got it down. I feel bad. I know he hurt his back. I saw him call the doctor.
The moment of choice. What will the doctor give you, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for muscle aches, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Boots is okay. Dad's feeling better. How great is that?
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Leaders of the European Union are meeting again for a second day today in Greece to discuss major political reforms. A British plan to establish camps for asylum seekers outside the EU's border has been dropped after other countries raised objections at a pre-summit dinner. More from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
Human rights groups had already attacked the British proposal, which London says would curb the flow of immigrants, as unlawful, and it's now been dropped from the summit's agenda. On Friday, members are discussing a statement which would warn North Korea and Iran about their nuclear activities. But the most urgent Europe-wide topic is the draft constitution on the EU's future. Governments will hold national debates on the proposed reforms, which include an elected EU president and foreign policy official, before an international meeting in October to agree the final version. Suzanne Chislett, London.
And an internal review has cleared officials at the Air Force Academy of mishandling complaints by female cadets of sexual abuse and harassment. The study blamed an outdated gender client student hierarchy and confusing rules for sexual abuse and harassment cases at the Academy. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop. Does your car sound like the Clydesdales in Fast Forward? The problem could be unhealthy joints. No, not the horses, your cars. When we come back, I'll tell you all about it. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first, until we tested 6 Tornado units, and in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today, or visit TornadoAir.com. That clacking could be a sign of old age in your car's CV or constant velocity joints. These flexible joints allow drive shafts and axles to steer cars smoothly. But if they don't function properly, axles could freeze up or even fall off. How do you recognize faulty CV joints? Popping and clicking when turning and clunking when accelerating are classic signs. And if you can create these noises by putting your car in reverse and backing in a circle, your CV joints are really aching. So communicate these symptoms to your technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, covering all of North and Central America, and streaming live on the internet from IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org. Fourth graders in 2002, according to today's USA Today, this was the lead story in a lot of the news shows this morning as well, showed significant reading gains compared with 1998. However, there was a gotcha in there. 31% of fourth graders and 33% of eighth graders showed that they could understand and analyze material considered challenging for their grade level, which means that more than a majority could not. In 1998, 29% of fourth graders and 33% of eighth graders achieved that mark. So it seems like things are getting better, but maybe they're not. In some areas, they're clearly not. Our guest today, Dr. Andrew Bernstein, is a writer, novelist, lecturer, and teacher. He's published on many philosophical and literary issues and lectures regularly on a broad range of topics at American universities, including Harvard, Stanford, West Point, Northwestern, the University of Michigan, the University of Chicago, the University of Wisconsin, Carnegie Mellon University, and Columbia University. And welcome to the program today, Dr. Bernstein.
Good to be here, Tom.
Thank you. I'm pronouncing your name right.
Yes, that's correct.
Great. Okay. We're going to talk about school vouchers. You are an advocate of school vouchers. I'm wondering if school vouchers are a backdoor to union busting and a corporate takeover of education. What?
Well, actually, I'm not in favor of vouchers because I believe that The problem with vouchers is that the government still controls the spending, and consequently, when the government controls the spending, it controls the educational content. What I'm in favor of is a full privatization of the educational system. So I'm in favor of a much more radical solution to the problem of vouchers.
Do you think that education should still be compulsory?
No, I do not believe it should be compulsory. I believe that, you know, it's immoral for the government to force people to do anything except obey the laws against committing crimes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's a need to make the education compulsory. History shows us that in a free country, parents overwhelmingly seek to educate their children. They don't need the government to force them to try to educate their kids.
Now, the argument that's made in favor of compulsory education, if you go back and read Horace Mann and the history of education in America, I mean, there was the public argument, and then there was the private argument. Horace Mann made the public argument that in order to have a well-informed citizenry, that in order to further the goals of democracy, and of course Thomas Jefferson wrote about this and worked in the later part of his life aggressively to this end, in creating the University of Virginia and virtually demanding free public education right up through college.
Right.
And Horace Mann pointed to that and said, well, you know, we need to have an educated electorate if we're going to have people who are active participants in a democracy. And then, on the other hand, he went to the citizens, he went to the legislature of Massachusetts, what's called the Know-Nothing Legislature of, what was it, 1887 or 1880, I forget the year, during the Gilded Age there, and said that, this was a Protestant group that had taken over the Massachusetts legislature, and they were very concerned about the Catholic problem, about all these Catholics who were coming over from Ireland in Boston. They had reached a numerical advantage, yet Protestants controlled the legislature, and Horace Mann went to them and said, we can break the back of the Catholics simply by forcing their children to go to state schools. And that was the birth of compulsory education, many historians of modern education suggest. What's your notion of the history of education and how this came
about? Well, I mean, I think Andrew Coulson wrote a good book on this, Thomas. The title is Market Education, mm-hmm. The Unknown History. And he goes back historically, going back as far as classical Greece, and shows, by contrast, that when education was left in private hands, in the hands of parents and private educators, the result was always a much greater educational standards than when the cases where education was left in the hands of the government. The government basically seeks to indoctrinate, and your example is a very good one. The birth of government schools in this country was conceived in order to ram the Protestant Bible down the throats of Catholic families. Today, you see the government schools to some extent ramming politically correct, anti-American dogma down the throats of American students. It's government schools, whether they're in ancient Sparta or in Prussia or Nazi Germany or Soviet Union or Cuba or wherever, when they're in the hands of the government, it's basically indoctrination. And I think what privatization of the educational system does is it means greater parental choice and control of education and less governmental control, and that is always a good thing.
We're talking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein, who has written extensively on this topic. In fact, I've got somewhere here in my pile, I've got an article. Here we are, an article that you wrote called Rational Education or the State of Education, Why Students Can't Add or Subtract. Now, you know, I have to, just in the interest of just laying this out here, let me just say that my bias on this issue. On the one hand, I am very concerned about the whole idea of compulsory education, that when the state absolutely mandates something and uses the force of imprisonment to promote it, if you go back to the 1809, the Battle of Jena that the Germans or that the Prussians lost, leading to the King of Prussia, after he'd been driven all the way back up to Kaliningrad, what then was called Königsberg, asking Fichte, the famous German philosopher, to come up with a way that he could defeat Napoleon's army. Fichte said, well, you've got to, you know, your soldiers aren't sufficiently compliant, and they don't think of the government as being more powerful than their family. They're more worried about their family than they are about you, the king. And so you need to create compulsory education, Fichte said. And that brought about, and so I've written about this in several of my books. On the other hand, I also believe that let's go at this, that it is important that we have education available to people who don't have the means to get it. Just like with, you know, rationing of health care, we have rationing of education. We will have, if we privatize education, rationing of education, because you've got people who cannot afford private schools or cannot afford the best private schools. Shouldn't they have access to public schools?
You know, I absolutely agree with you that people need to have access to education. I think there's a fact that I'd want to, you know, relate here, one which is widely known and the other I think is widely unknown. The widely known fact, I think, is that private education in general is educationally superior to government schools or public schools. The little known fact is that private education is vastly cheaper, generally one half as costly in this country as government schools. That is, government schools spend on average twice as much per student with much worse results.
Well, let me just stop you there. I'm the president of the board of directors of a private school in New Hampshire. It's called the Hunter School in Rumney, New Hampshire. And it's an outgrowth of an institution that I was the director of from 1978 until 1983. And I disagree. You can find the statistics for that, but what you're going to find is that the little Waldorf schools and the Montessori schools and whatnot all around the country that are offering lower tuition rates, or the religious schools, are using church buildings. They're using people's homes. There's a whole layer of costs that are invisible when you're just looking at budgets. Whereas in public schools, what you're looking at are the real costs. Now the other. What I consider to be kind of a straw man argument that people make when they're making the argument that you're making is that the cost of teachers is too high in public education because they're unionized, and therefore we should do away with the unions. And I strongly disagree with that too. I think that if somebody's going to have the future of our children, of our society in their hands, they should be the very best people we can find, and they should be paid very well.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the unions do not, you know, with the seniority system, certainly do not have the best teachers available. But to go back to cost,
there are some brilliant teachers available in this country.
There are some very good classroom teachers in the public school system, but I think that's increasingly becoming less common. Rather than more common. And I think regarding cost.
But might that be, Dr. Bernstein, because we are strangling our schools? I mean, this No Child Left Behind joke that President Bush inflicted on the United States. We have schools that are dying right now for lack of funds.
Well, every time I look at the problem in the government schools, what I see is the teachers' unions calling for more money. They want to throw more money at the problem.
Why do you say throw more money?
That is not the solution.
Yeah, I mean, whenever people say throw money, you can spend money too.
Yeah, but they spend billions and billions and billions of dollars
and
get very, very poor,
you know,
results, where the private schools are much better. And, you know, what you said about religious schools is right, but remember something. What we're seeing increasingly is poor families, including, you know, black families, sending their kids to Catholic schools in the cities, even though a lot of those black families aren't Catholic. And, you know, the kids are doing much better in those schools. When you privatize the educational system, what that means is vastly increased competition.
But those kids are doing better in those schools because they're encountering smaller classrooms. They're encountering a situation that they wouldn't encounter if we had a widespread voucher system, or we had simply privatized all of public education, because then schools would be free to pick and choose. I mean, the school that we have in New Hampshire, we can say no to a student. If somebody, you know, and in fact, the program was set up specifically to take kids who cannot succeed and cannot function in public schools. And so our tuitions are fairly high and our class sizes are very small. But you can pick and choose. And when you have a situation like that, you're not going to have the positive side of private education that you're seeing right now, because what you're seeing is a highly distorted market.
I don't agree. I think competition on an open market is the best possible thing for customers, whether we're selling education or any other commodity.
So what are you going to do to ensure that competition? What are you going to do to ensure that competition? What happens when a corporation like Chris Whittle comes into town and buys up every school in the city?
I don't understand. Why is there a problem with it?
So, well, I thought competition was different organizations or companies or businesses competing with each other.
Yeah, but I mean, if Walmart has a monopoly in a given town, they don't go ahead and raise their prices.
They absolutely
do. Their quality.
They absolutely do. But it's well documented.
But the point is, the reason they're able to keep a monopoly is because they undersell their competitors.
No, the reason that they're able to keep a monopoly is because they've destroyed their competitors. Walmart comes into communities and they drop prices below their costs, and they wipe out the local businesses, and then they raise prices. There's a great book out called How Walmart is Destroying America, and it just documents this in excruciating detail. And, of course, Walmart's not the first to do this. I mean, John Rockefeller got put out of business in Ohio in 1782 because he was doing it in the oil industry.
And look, Tom, I mean, you're obviously mistaken on this point.
No, I'm not.
The point is that
monopolies are anti-competitive.
Competition on a free market is the only thing that eliminates monopolies, and there's no way Walmart can keep the making the money the way they do around the country if they charge higher prices than their competitors. They're simply going to
any competitors.
There's a million drug stores and all kinds of stores around the country that can compete, that can and do compete with Walmart. It's no company on a free market, not Microsoft, not Coke, not Walmart. Nobody can gain a monopoly on a free market. There's no way to keep their competitors out. And Standard Oil reduced prices significantly. That's why
Dr. Bernstein, every time a Walmart opens, typically 400 businesses go out of business within 200 miles of it. I mean, stick around. Can you hang on?
Sure.
Great. Okay, we got a commercial break here. We're talking to Dr. Andrew Bernstein. When we come back, remind me to give out your URL for your website. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
My cat Boots got stuck way up in a tree. My dad saw how scared I was. He climbed up there and got it down. I feel bad. I know he hurt his back. I saw him call the doctor.
The moment of choice. What will the doctor give you, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for muscle aches, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Boots is okay. Dad's feeling better. How great is that?
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Now, everything you need for successful estate planning comes in one package. The new Master Estate Kit is a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you'll get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims, court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Hi, this is Peter Werby from the IE America Radio Network. Wondering whether you've heard about In These Times magazine, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture, has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. Find out what you're missing. Visit them online at www.inthesetimes.com or call them toll-free at 1-800-827-0270.
Let's hear it for Ed Rosenthal. He's a marijuana grower. But before you can say drug dealer, let me say that he grows his marijuana to be sold for medical purposes, supplying patients under doctor supervision and who need the medicine to treat severe and chronic pain, cancer-induced nausea, and other ailments. Providing medical marijuana for these patients, many of whom are terminally ill and have no other medicine to ease their agonies, is not only humane and medically sound, but it's also perfectly legal. In 1996, the people of California voted to okay this use of the cannabis plant. In 2001, however, George W. chose John Mad Dog Ashcroft to be the U.S. Attorney General. And this super pious right-wing extremist has zero respect for the will of the people. Asserting his personal bias over states' rights and democratic choice, the authoritarian Ashcroft is on a prosecutorial crusade against California and the eight other states that have passed medical marijuana laws. Saying that his views and the federal law preempt state law, Ashcroft's agents have been going after people like Rosenthal with a vengeance. In a perverse Orwellian twist of justice, the feds convicted Ed by refusing to allow him to tell jurors that he was operating within state law. Jurors later angrily said they would have acquitted him had they known this. Now the good news. Instead of 100 years in prison and a $4.5 million fine, as the absurd federal law allows, the judge only assessed a $1,000 fine and one day in prison for Ed. Rosenthal will now appeal this silly conviction itself, and his case has become a rallying point for all of us who think this federal law is an anti-American assault on our basic liberties. Yet Ashcroft is as arrogant and autocratic as ever. As one of his agents said of Ed and us supporters of common sense, we are not listening to them. This is Jim Hightower saying, and that's exactly what's wrong with national drug policy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Here they come again. Can't you sit again? Time to get a move on. We were young with all of our might.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking today about public education. Should public education be privatized, or should we do it better as a public franchise, as it were? We're speaking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein, who's... Dr. Bernstein, are you with the Ayn Rand Institute, or do you just write for them?
Yes, I write for them. I lecture for them, but I teach philosophy in the New York area at Pace University and SUNY Purchase.
Okay, great. And people can learn more about your writings and things at ayn rand.com?
They can go to my website, which is www.andrewbernstein.net.
Okay.
And they can go to the Ayn Rand Institute's website, which is just www.aynrand.org.
Great. And we have on the line, if you'd like to be in the program, by the way, and talk to me or Dr. Bernstein, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 825-5937. And we have Tony in Waukegan, Illinois, on the line. Tony, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Tony.
Hi, Doctor.
Hi, how are you, Tony?
I'm doing fine. I am a chemistry teacher. I'm a public high school chemistry teacher in Waukegan, Illinois. And I can tell you that I honestly disagree with many of your points. First of all, if we were to talk about the quality of teachers that are coming out now I cannot. I fortunately have been able to teach in three different districts across this country. I've taught in Little Rock, Arkansas. I've taught in Rockford, Illinois. And I've taught now here in Waukegan area, Illinois, too. And I've been able to see firsthand what goes on in the classrooms. Now, there are a lot of teachers who are very hardworking, extremely dedicated to our students, who are constantly busting their butts day in and day out with minimal help from administration, minimal support from the public and parents. Let's not forget the parents, because they abdicate an awful lot of their responsibilities in the educational process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really unreasonable to lay all of the problems in public education at our doorstep. Number two, the situation regarding the funding. There is something going on in public education that I don't think, and Tom kind of hit on this point when he was talking about his private school there on the East Coast. They can select who they want and who they don't want. Well, you know, there's this thing out there in public education called special education. I don't think anyone really understands how pervasive and expensive this program really is. It pulls so much, it adds so much to the bottom line.
Yeah, that's the market we're serving with our school.
You know, per student expenditure. But in terms of actual general funds, general education, of course, you know, because it's an unfunded federal mandate, it doesn't go into helping the general classroom teacher. It doesn't go into helping the general classroom student.
Okay, Tony, let me pause you right there, and let's get Dr. Bernstein's response to this, and then if you've got further points, we can come back to that. Let me just add to what Tony said, by the way, Dr. Bernstein.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
I have never in my life met a teacher who went into it for the money. And as I said, I've been on both sides of this. We homeschooled one of our children. We put one of our children in private school. One of our children went through public school. I went through public schools, and I participate in running a private school. So I think I have a pretty good overview of this. And I have, but in the corporate world, I have met a lot of people who are just in it for the money. And my concern is that if we privatize education, we're going to see a we're in it for the money mentality, and it's going to destroy education.
Well, I think a we're in it for the money mentality is the best possible thing because, I mean, if you look at corporate America, whatever problems we can point out there, those guys, those people are productive.
We need Enron running our schools.
That's why we're the capitalist countries are the wealthiest by far, and the non-cap, you know, from Hong Kong to Japan to Western Europe, where the non-capitalist countries are poor or worse. So my point is not that the classroom teachers in the public schools are doing a bad job. I don't know where Tony got that idea from. My point is simply that when you privatize the educational system, and by the way, one thing that has to be done along with that, of course, is obviously tax credits for education.
Right, Dr.
Money.
Bernstein, if you could hold that thought, we've got a break. This is just a 2-minute break here, and Tony, stay on the line. We've got Eric in Kansas City also wants to drop in a note. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A new office with the United Nations will help countries manage their water resources through cooperation. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of the world's large rivers pass through more than one country on their way to the sea. For example, the Columbia River starts on the west slope of the Rocky Mountains in Canada, but it passes through the northwestern United States before it reaches the Pacific Ocean. Around the world, a total of 145 countries share rivers or aquifers with their neighbors. They have to work together to manage water use and to control floods and water pollution. The United Nations has created a new office to help them. It's called the Water Cooperation Facility, and Lena Salome is one of its coordinators. Salome says shared water resources can sometimes be a source of international tension.
There are mainly two issues. It's the quantity and the quality of the water. These are really the main issues that have to be taken into account when you are dealing with sharing or managing water resources between two users.
Salome says water is becoming scarce in many parts of the world. She says political scuffles over water are common, but armed conflict is not likely to break out. Salome says countries usually manage to settle water disputes peacefully, and she expects that trend to continue.
Violence over water is really not rational. It is not viable economically. So our forecast is that nation states would really cooperate rather than create conflict over water.
Salome says the UN's Water Cooperation Facility will help countries work together to develop water management plans and to mediate disputes if they arise. Participation in the program is voluntary, and Salome says many countries have expressed interest in joining. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The Peter Werbe Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werbe Show has
support. They abdicate a lot of their responsibilities in the educational process.
Are you suggesting, Tony, that if education was privatized, this would get worse?
Because
I think Dr. Bernstein is saying it would get better.
If education were privatized, now, just a moment ago, the doctor suggested that that money, that teachers and money would somehow, you know, fix the problem. You know, if it were privatized, we made it like
the magic of the free market.
Yes.
Okay.
Unfortunately, and you mentioned this before, Tom, I don't know any teachers who go into this profession looking for the funds. It is not about the money. There is so much more to this than money. And it is an insult to everybody who is a teacher to assume that just because they get paid more money, they're going to do a better job.
Okay.
That's not why we go into it.
Okay, point one. The second point was
about special ed. The special ed and the fact that the federal government has not helped the states in its funding of this unfunded mandate. The special ed program, I mean, if you just take a look at any
right. Special ed is completely out of control. I agree. I'm right there with you, Tony. In fact, that's why the school that we have in New Hampshire exists, is because the special ed is out of control.
Yeah, and it's so expensive. I mean,
right.
It pulls money away from every other program. I mean, there are programs where, you know, one special ed student, and I hate to say it this way because, you know, special ed, I mean, they're kids too, and they're important kids. But, you know, when you're looking at just the sheer numbers, it really hurts the quote-unquote average students, those in the middle, whom we're really trying to help out the most.
Okay, Tony, great. Thank you. Thank you for the call, and thank you for your comments. I appreciate that. Dr. Bernstein, your response to this.
Well, my point is an entirely different point, Tom.
Well, how about responding to these points?
Classroom teachers are generally good. I think that's true. I also agree that I think parents abdicate their responsibility a lot.
Well, no, I think what Tony is suggesting is that teachers go into teaching because they care about teaching and they care about the kids. And if they were put in a for-profit environment where they had to meet quarterly profit goals for the corporation, and you tried to incentivize them with cash, you would lose those people who are in it because they really care about the teaching, and you'd end
yeah,
up.
I think that's. I mean,
end
that
up with
I think
a bunch
is
of.
Second. I mean, I think the moral juxtaposition of profit-making with not caring about students...
Well, no, I think that the reality is that the teachers wouldn't be making profit. The teachers would be earning an income. There's a difference.
I understand. And so
if the teachers who are earning an income are subject to a system who, by law, its first consideration has to be, and also by simply, you know, survival of business, its first consideration has to be to generate profit, and its second consideration is doing education.
I think
that's going to change the nature of education in a negative way.
Well, I think it's definitely going to change the nature of education enormously in a positive way. And I think in general, it's profit making on a free market and in competition that is the one guarantor to ensure quality products. Whether it's Coke in competition with other cola manufacturers or Microsoft in competition, it's the
very who's in competition with Microsoft
being open competition on a free market. That means they have to put out a better product.
Who competes with Microsoft?
The free market's not magical. It's merely productive. On a free market, schools have to compete.
You know, I agree with you, Dr. Bernstein, but we don't have a free market.
That's true.
And both from your point of view and from my point of view, we don't have a free market. And as I said, you know, name one competitor to Microsoft. They're a monopoly. They have come to dominate the marketplace. And similarly in education, if you have this what you guys call a free market, you know, this is where Ayn Rand confused capitalism and free enterprise. Clearly, she didn't understand. It's probably what happened. I mean, she was born in Russia. Her father's business was lost in the Bolshevik Revolution. She came over here very bitter about that and basically thought that the only kind of government that could exist was a government that ultimately become like the Soviet government, and clearly had not read the writings of the founders of this country and didn't understand democracy.
Well, that's false. But the point here is that Microsoft or any private company in a capitalist country does a vastly better job at what it does than the government schools do or have ever done or ever could do.
I strongly disagree. Microsoft does very good at making money.
I can only pray that Microsoft could run the public school system, you know, or the people at Coke or the people at General Motors or the people at Toyota.
Okay, let's take those examples then. If Microsoft was running the public schools, you'd have to reboot every day. You'd have crash. If Coke was running the schools, we would be promoting things that destroy health. I mean, you know, give kids cavities. Come on.
I'm not silly.
Coke is in the business of selling a product that's harmful to children.
These are companies that put out products in the marketplace that customers value, put their money down. What would happen in an open market in education is you would have a vast range of competition. You'd have some religious schools, some secular schools. You'd have some schools that taught, in reading, and some schools that taught phonics.
But we have that right now.
progressive ads, some that were Marxist, but we'd have it on a much wider scale. Can I make my point from before?
Please.
We need, obviously, to go with this would be refunds, tax credits for education, so that the money that taxpayers currently spend on government schools would be refunded to them, so that they could get into the private education marketplace and afford to send their kids to private schools. And with that much more money going into the private school market, you're going to see a proliferation of schools of different kinds in response to consumer demand. So right now, the big battle in the public schools is evolution or creationism. On a private school market, some schools will teach evolution, some will teach creationism, some will teach both. You have more parental choice and more parental control. The one point I want to make to Tony, Tom, if you let me do it real quick, is that I think the main reason, at least one main reason, that private schools tend to educate their children better than public schools is you get more parental involvement. Tony's right. There's parental abdication. More parental involvement occurs in private schools for a simple reason. Parents get more involved when the money comes out of their own pocket.
No, I would say that, in my experience, more parents are involved with private schools because you have a demographic self-selection there. You have parents who are involved in everything more because that's one of the reasons why they chose private schools in the beginning. But I'll let you get back to that if you'd like, but Eric in Kansas City has been patiently holding on the line here for quite a while. Eric, welcome to the Tom Hartman program, and thank you for calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for having me on. Actually, I originally called to make similar points that Tony was making, but I'm happy to change my conversation onto the whole idea of free market and our public schools.
Okay.
I think first off, we have to talk about the fact that education is not something you can sell on a shelf. It cannot be packaged. It is not a one-size-fits-all to every student. And there's absolutely no way that a private market can make a product that parents can then pick off the shelf and compare to the product that's next to it. Without government oversight, corporations in general tend to do what they want. Voluntary regulations never seem to work. Enron, is the most recent example, but they've been throughout the history.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think that, point about public education, I came from an area that had that single demographic where it was rich, it was upper middle class. Parents were involved in the schools. It was all public schools. You didn't need to send your kids to a private school because the public schools were quality, because the money, the tax base was there. If you end up just giving people a tax break, then only the rich people are going to be able to afford send their kids to schools. The people who aren't paying a lot of taxes aren't going to get the tax break. They're not going to have any money to send their kids to any schools.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate that comment, Eric, in Kansas City. Dr. Bernstein, your response?
Well, the first point, I think, again, is mistaken. That there'll be a one-size-fits-all. That's what you get more in the public schools. Under capitalism, on a free market, what you get is tremendous product diversity. I mean, for instance, automobiles, you could buy a Volkswagen or a Rolls Royce. I mean, you get any product in between, you'll have the same thing in the free market of education. You have tremendous diversity amongst which to choose that you don't get in the one-size-fits-all government schools, where there's state-mandated curriculum. The second point about tax credits, meaning only the rich can send their kids to private schools, that's what you have now. Only the rich can send, or affluent can send their kids to private school. If you privatize the educational system, finally the poor guy is going to get a chance to send his kid to private school because when you have the money back from your taxes and competition amongst private schools, what you have is more money in the hands of poor parents and competition bringing down the price on an open market, as historically it always does in every field. So now you finally get a chance for the poor guy to send his kid get a good education.
So you're saying that if somebody's making minimum wage, they're making $10,000-$12,000 a year, and they're paying payroll taxes, and they're paying sales taxes, and they're paying property tax, they're paying a lot of taxes, but they're not paying any income tax, that you would give them an income tax cut, and from that they could pay to send their kid to private school?
Yeah, because what's going to prevent a Marva Collins from starting a one-bedroom schoolroom in her house, taking kids in from poor black families for a pittance? On an open market, there's nothing to prevent the Marva Collinses of the world from doing that.
There's nothing right now to prevent them from doing it.
For those kids. And Tom, remember, more, and the interesting fact is more and more poor Black families in the cities are starting to send their kids to Catholic schools. Catholic schools are not that expensive.
You know, first of all, let me point out there are more poor white families in America than poor black
families.
Well,
them too.
Okay. But
I think the point is, historically, what we've seen in a thousand issues is competition in an open marketplace brings down the price. So, yes, I think the poor guys making $10,000, $12,000 a year, white or any other color, will be able to afford to send their kids to a private school that may not be Choate or Exeter, but is better in general than the government schools are today. Yes, I do believe it.
Okay, I think respectfully, you're living on a planet that I don't occupy, but, you know, it's Ryan in Santa Fe has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, Ryan, go ahead. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, Tom, good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I think
great
your guest is making one major mistake when he tries to say that the free market will work in something like education, and then comparing companies like Coke or Microsoft. Invariably, what you end up with in free market competition in instances like that is one or two companies completely dominating the market, like Coke and Pepsi, and then a few little useless companies, or Microsoft, and then you've got Apple, which has a tiny share of the market. And then they not only are owning the market, they're dictating the terms of their product. They're not just out there making things saying, gee, I hope this sells. They're making things, advertising them, and basically using psychology, coercing people into using them or buying them. There's no choice. And I think that illustrates very well that, the free market system basically falls apart at that level.
Yeah, it's called monopoly. It's why Senator Sherman in 1880 proposed Senate Bill Number 1, which became the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Right.
Dr. Bernstein and Ryan, thank you for your call. I appreciate your comments. Dr. Bernstein, you want to try to defend that?
Yeah, I think the exact opposite is true. The government holds a monopoly. They're not accountable to their customers because they don't have any competition, which is why government schools are not good and getting worse.
But the government does have competition. I compete with the government in education.
Tom, can I just finish my point? There are huge monolith tax subsidized that's very difficult for a small private school to compete with.
No, it's not.
But the second point I want to make, again, is just to reiterate, I could only wish, if there were a God, I could only pray that the school system in this country could be run as productively as Microsoft is run. Because the reason that Microsoft has an enormous market share is because their products are good for their money and the customers like them. It's on a free market that you have choice, not in a state finance government monolith. That is simply bizarre.
What we have right now is a state control. I mean, Microsoft basically bought off the politicians so that they wouldn't go after them for antitrust violations. You have a state right now that's controlled by Microsoft.
I'd much rather have the state controlled by Microsoft than by the politicians.
Okay, let's bring John in from Long Beach.
Incompetent.
John in Long Beach called 1-800-TALK. Yes, John, thanks for calling. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Hey.
Well, I don't have much of an academic background, but having said that, I will say this. My understanding, the public education system was set up so far, people who cannot afford to send their children to private schools. If you get the money, you can send your children to private schools. Also, if you're qualified and you don't like the public education system, you can teach your children at home. Or you can hire a tutor.
Right.
This idea to privatize the whole public education system is just hogwash. It is another effort by the corporations to take over more and more. We don't need that. I mean, does anybody remember Enron and World.com or whatever it was, and all these other corporations, Halliburton, Bechtel, and so forth? We do not need that.
Okay.
There's certain things you just do not privatize.
Got it, John. Thank you. Thank you for your comment, and thanks for calling. Dr. Bernstein, we have about 30 seconds left. If you want to wrap up in maybe 10 or 15.
I think the caller's answered his own point. he's talking about, you know, homeschooling or hiring a private tutor, et cetera, which people do because they get better education that way. That's a form of private education. It's exactly that private education on a wider scale that's necessary. As far as corporations being corrupt, I agree Ken Lay should probably go to prison, I think, but, I mean, it's the government that's corrupt and commits, you know, commits murder in socialist and communist countries by, you know,
okay,
by
but
millions.
We don't,
private
we
corporations
don't,
do that.
Right, I agree, and we don't live in a socialist or communist country. Dr. Andrew Bernstein, thank you very much. AyanRand.org is the website where you can find more information, or AndrewBernstein.net. Thank you very much for being on the program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
One of the reasons people give for not buying LoJack is where they live. But that has little to do with whether your car will be stolen. It's where you drive. Do you drive to work, to a mall, to the city? That's why you need LoJack. Nationally, stolen vehicles that have LoJack are recovered over 90% of the time. And LoJack guarantees they'll recover your vehicle within 24 hours after you report it stolen to the police, or LoJack will reimburse you the cost of your LoJack system. See your car dealer or LoJack.com.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express lawsuit funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
Hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month, you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important. On the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
The Peter Worby Show.
Doug's in Santa Fe listening to KTRC.
Isn't it good that the people that are in power can always contradict themselves?
Yeah, did
prostitution
you...
Prostitution wasn't legal in Iraq, but yet Saddam Hussein had a series of concubines, one of which our CIA and federal government was getting information on him prior to the war.
Right. Turned out he uses Viagra. But so does Bob Dole.
He does.
But so does Bob Dole. And thank you for Viagra. How many people are getting to go to Viagra Falls these days that previously couldn't? So it's a good thing.
Did you know this? That Saddam also wrote romance novels, writes them, writes plays and things like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, and he likes Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
He takes Viagra, puts on the Frank Sinatra tunes, and off he goes.
The Peter Werby Show, weekdays from 2 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Ghost chickens in the sky. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. We're talking about public schools. 97% of school vouchers are used for people to attend religious schools. I realize our last guest wasn't promoting a voucher program. He was, he himself said what he was suggesting was something far more radical than that. But the voucher thing is the one that's going to be front and center. And this is, in my opinion, simply an assault on public education by the religious right. The big problem, the first big problem, is that the vouchers never cover the real cost of education, and particularly they don't cover the real cost of education for kids who are struggling. There are private schools out there that charge $10, $20, $30, $40, $50,000 a year in tuition for really difficult kids, kids who've had miserable lives, kids who are facing specific challenges in their learning abilities, kids who have, you know, for whatever reason, and there's a whole spectrum of reasons, and people, kids who have television poisoning, you know, who've spent so much time in front of TV that they never learned how to read, kids who have real problems. These vouchers don't address that. The vouchers only give enough money to transfer wealth from all of us to those people who have enough money to send their kids to private schools. And so this is just another, the voucher program is just another let's support the rich a little more kind of program. The schools in Cleveland and in Miami where schools, where voucher systems were used, have been devastated. And it's not about parental choice. It's about school choice. This is about school choice. Jeff in Denver's on the line. Jeff, we've got just about a minute left here. You want a final point for the day?
Yeah, listening to your guests, it's rather interesting because I did like Ayn Rand for a while, but he's done more to turn me off to Ayn than almost anyone. I just didn't hear any essence in what he was talking about. And if you're going to use Microsoft as a, you know, a support for your argument, you should understand Microsoft. And
Microsoft is the Death Star. Jeff, we've come up against the end of the hour here. Thank you for your comment. Thanks for calling in. We'll follow up on that next week. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Common Sense from the Radical Middle. Thanks for joining us. Tune back in on Monday. We'll see you same time, same place.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.